Right now, it is time for Appraise This with Tim Luke and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys, the Frick and Frack of Nick and Knack. You'll find them on the web at tqag.com, Treasure Quest Appraisal Group. And we say good morning. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Both at home. Holy smokes.
Well, for not this for week.
That's right.
Yeah, I leave Saturday.
and then I'll be giving classes to Mr. Computer over there in a couple of weeks, right? About 3 weeks, right?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. You use that word Mr. Computer very loosely.
That's right. It's 2.5-3 hours a day, and then we'll set up your computer, so if I ever have to get into it from a remote location, I'll be able to.
Yes. Screen share is my favorite tool.
All right. Well, what's going on in the appraisal business here right before Thanksgiving?
Well, I have to say, I want to thank Jill for sending me, before I saw this, she sent an article about this jewel heist at this place in
Dresden, Germany.
In Dresden. And I have to tell you, I literally, even though this stuff has no relationship to our country or me personally, I'm heartsick about it, because this is the heritage of Saxony, dating back to the 16th and 17th century, and I don't think there's anything worse than having someone's history violated like that. And these things, you know, the chances of them coming back in one piece it seems to be slipping away, even though they apparently have a couple of suspects. I think once this crime happened, I think everything started falling into place for the end game, which is more than likely to have these things broken up. And that would be such, I don't know if people have seen the photographs of the pieces that they're starting to come out now as to what the pieces were stolen. And I think it's a good thing, because then people can see, if they're being fenced, what they look like, and hopefully someone will have a conscience and do the right thing. But it's really just makes me heartsick to see all of this history just gone.
Well, you know, you can't blame it on today's society, because people have been taking treasures, whether they're religious artifacts or paintings or statues or anything, very overtly taking them, and then using them for it's not like, you know, years ago museums and countries made mistakes when they went out and they found artifacts and they brought them back, but at least they put them in museums where people could see them. But it's just terrible, because there is no remorse, or there is no significance that people find in these treasures and these pieces of arts and these artifacts. None.
And if you stop and think, after looking at these pieces, how many jewels were in each of these pieces, it staggers the imagination as to what will happen to these, and how much these pieces individually, these jewels, will bring on the black market. So I don't know what to say, other than just, it just seems like a very sad day for humanity when something like this happens, that it's not just the history of Saxony, it's world history that has been affected, and I find it very sad.
It's
and we have a moment there.
Yeah,
and a moment there.
But I hate to say this, but if you look at it on all levels, it's the world we live in.
There's
greed. I'm sure everybody, when they sit there and watch auctions, if I sit there and I watch an automobile auction, and I see a car go by and someone has to bid $75,000, $85,000, $90,000, I'd love to be able to do that. I can't, but at least that's open bidding. That's the way the world is set up. But when people just want to take something and for this the sole purpose of getting rid of it for more money so it's never seen again, it's just absolutely, it drives me crazy. But it's the height of greed, and we live in the age of greed.
That's right.
Yes. And you know, the sad thing is, just like everything else in life, there are levels. People have jobs, certain jobs to do. They get paid certain amounts of money. And unfortunately, the people who actually did the deed are probably the lowest paid in the totem pole. Somewhere along the line, whoever is getting these at the end of the line is the one who is the greediest, because they are going to more than likely benefit from their actual value, not the person who stole them. And it's sad what we humans will do for a little bit of money. And I just can't stop talking about this, because it's all I've been watching for the past 2 days, because it's like when when you stop and think about that, the fire that started this whole thing that caused the power outage this was a very well thought out thing. And It's just sad. But on a happier note,
before you get to the happier note, here's what people fail to realize in today's world: nobody's getting out of here alive.
Yes,
you know, in the end, none of us are getting out of here alive.
Very true.
All right, now on a happier note.
Well, on a happier note, there was a sale this week. We've been talking about some of the
baseball memorabilia have
brought over the past month, and yet another sale happened at R&R in Boston. They are, I think, they do primarily autographs, but they had a 1954 Mickey Mantle had 3 or 4 baseball cards that came up. And one started at, it sold for $10,000, and then a 1952 Topps sold for $88,000, and a 1953 Topps sold for almost $16,000. But the biggest piece that sold was a Babe Ruth rookie card, which, honestly, I've never even seen. I never even thought about Babe Ruth having a rookie card, I suppose. But anyway, that was the premier item that sold at the auction, and it sold for, what was it, Tim?
$110,000. And part of why it sold for that is that rookie cards, especially at that time, they didn't come out every year like they do now, or the baseball cards didn't come out. So this was one of his, Babe Ruth's, first professional cards, because he was with the Red Sox, and this was as a pitcher. It shows him pitching, you know, and he was a left-handed pitcher. So not only known for his great batting ability, but also his pitching. And this also, on the back of the card, had an advertisement for a local store in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So at that time, they would have the backs would be ordered by different companies to promote their wares, whatever it was. So they had determined, the auction house had determined, that this is not only rare in the sense that for this particular thing being Grand Rapids and being his his first professional rookie card, but they put a number of less than 50 or less than 30, I think, are known out there with these advertisements on the back. So that's that, because what happened then, it was basically the advertisements, then it went into the tobacco cards, and it was a lot of the tobacco was on the back, and then they decided, you know, not so good, so let's go into they did the stats and everything. So that's the development of the cards.
I predict that this might possibly end up being on the level of the Honus Wagner card in the future. I think it's only going to increase in value
down the road. Absolutely, yeah. Because I mean, it's on the trajectory, the same trajectory of what the Honus Wagner card did back in the 80s. It sold for actually 70s, I think it sold in the 100,000s, and then it was in the mid 80s, it sold for almost half a million dollars, and then just continued to rise because of its notoriety and also who purchased it. Now, this particular individual who purchased this is an anonymous, wanted to remain anonymous, but they did say an anonymous California collector of sports cards. So we literally narrowed it down. Right.
Who lives at 123 North Main Street.
No, it was a studio executive for a very famous franchise, and let the force be with you. You know, I mean, no, they didn't go into that, but you know, they may as well have. It's like, okay. So interesting how these early, and this is with baseball cards, is that, remember, it's these early, very iconic players that are really holding their value, increasing in value, and of course the card was graded. So it was with baseball cards now, it does have to go through an authenticity process and a grading process, and there are companies that are out there. I remember Greg and I came across a collection. This was when we were first starting out. This is probably 20 some odd years ago. And it was great. It was in a remember that, Greg? It was in the bottom of a dresser drawer.
Yeah,
we were up in Vero Beach, and we were like going through them, and it was wonderful. And we were selling them online, and you couldn't do that today. I mean, for some of those, we'd have to advise the client that it would need to be authenticated and put in the plastic sleeves that they keep it in to grade it, because it's amazing, well, especially down here in Florida, that what the environment just does to the cardboard and how the edges, just a little minor nick or abrasion to the side of the card or the corners, if they're not crisp corners, that could be the difference. That could be a $10,000, $5,000, $500 difference, just depending on the card and where it is. So condition has really, really reigned this entire collecting area, and the authentication people and everything, you know, they've really helped at least grade the cards, because that's something, grade and authenticate, that's something that we as appraisers, we can say that, I mean, that becomes our opinion, and quite honestly the grading committees, that's also their opinion. As far as what their grade is, they have their criteria and everything, but that's their opinion. The facts that we look at is, yeah, the corner is bent, or there is no corner, because we did have several cards that were like that. So what we do as appraisers is try to render the what are the facts? What are the physical characteristics that we actually see, and convey that so that the purchaser can then assess what kind of condition that is to them. So,
did you collect baseball cards when you were a kid?
No, like everything else I've done in my life, I was a loser. I collected football cards. and here's where I really, really missed the boat. And I was a big, I was not a DC comic fan, okay? I was a Marvel comic fan. I was when they were upstart when I was a kid. I had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Marvel comics, original Marvel comics, and I had the prizes that you sent away from and everything. I wish I could find them. But I was a big Marvel comic collector, and
I did have a Hank Aaron rookie card and put it in the spokes of my bicycle with the clothespin.
I've never liked physical activity, so you never had a. Even if you put a card in my bicycle spokes, it survived really well.
Well, the reason that I ask you about the baseball cards is because, you know, most people collect Topps was sort of the company that everybody collected, I guess, and that was the most common at the time, and. There was a set in this sale of a master set of 1956 cards that sold at this auction for $300,000.
Well, I'll just bring this to an end by telling you, when I was a kid and I was given Topps baseball cards, everything got thrown away except for the bubble gum.
The gum,
the stale, sugary covered gum.
Yes,
that was absolutely
white powder.
Yes, right.
White powder,
which I'm convinced was cocaine to make you want more. But
you know, I can close my eyes and smell that gum. It's something. It's a memory that will never go away.
Well, I want you guys to have a happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, same to you. And all the listeners, we wish everyone a wonderful, be grateful for the things you have and the people around you.
That's it. All right, guys, I'll speak to you next week.
Okay. Take care, Marshall. Have a great week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, buddy.
Tim Luke, Greg Schramm, the Appraisal Guys, the Frickin' Frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise. This